everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show featuring our hosts, Ricky Hampton and Michael Robinson, columnists for the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Hey, Mike, man, it's been a while since we've been on. I almost forgot the doggone introduction, man. It is good to be back on the air, my brother.
Yeah, it was mutual.
I couldn't hear you, Mike.
I said the feeling's mutual.
Yeah, man. Good to be back, my brother. Hey, we got a great show lined up tonight. We're going to be joined shortly by our good friend Sam Puryear, one of the great golf coaches in America. Hey, alumni of the Big Blue, TSU.
There you go.
First black golf coach in the Big Ten. Led the Spartans to a Big Ten title, won a national championship at Stanford University, has worked at Queensbury College, and just one of the great teachers of the game and one of the great coaches. Sam is going to join us in a couple of minutes, man. But Mike, before we get to Sam, how about Coco Gauff tonight at the U.S. Open?
first of all, we need to acknowledge the queen ahead of her. She just dominated Maria Sharapova last night. So we got to, since we weren't on last night, so we got to give her credit that she's been looking kind of shaky in a couple of these matches. Remember, she had the back injury, so she just got rid of that. And this is supposedly some type of rivalry, but she's dominated Maria. Ever since
right,
she beat her,
that is so funny. Serena and
right.
Sharapova, what rivalry. She has kicked her butt out their career.
Right, but you know what it's all about, because this is what I was explaining to somebody on Twitter. I was saying, hey, look, they want her to be their American darling, even though she's from Russia, because she fits what they want, the blonde hair, tall, all that stuff, and and whereas the Williams sisters don't fit that, I mean, Gauff is not going to fit it either. And even Osaka's not going to fit it. So that's who they would love to be, the American starlet. But, once again, then they're excusing that she had a suspension. It's amazing how they were just skating all around that, and then people on Twitter were saying, a lot of the media guys were saying, you know what? What if Serena or Venus was suspended for using illegal substances? You wouldn't have all these excuses being made and all this histrionics about how, she's a survivor and all this stuff. So it was just kind of really disappointing to hear all that caping, and you're caping for someone that's not even from our country. So,
and you know what? I just looked up their record. In singles play against each other. Serena, they played 23 times, and Serena has beat her 20 times. So that's not much of a rivalry when you got a 20-3 record against your opponent. Yeah, it's good to see Serena out there playing well, but it was great to watch young Coco tonight, 15 years old.
Right.
She plays with a lot of poise, and Her athleticism seems sneaky to me. I mean, she just seems to get to wherever she needs to go very smooth. And you know what? Well, I do want to go back to that Serena thing, because I'm thinking golf tonight with Coach Puryear coming on. You know, the same thing with Serena having all these rivalries. And Tiger went through that same thing in his career. They throw somebody out there, it's Bill and Tiger. Tiger and Ernie Els. Then they went through the thing, where's the big five? They're just going to throw four guys at Tiger. Tiger and four other guys. When really, at the height of his powers, man, he just dominated the same way Serena has. So, yeah, Coco Gauff won tonight. She's off tomorrow. She'll move on Wednesday. I think Serena's playing tomorrow. Is Venus in the tournament? You know, I haven't heard anything about Venus.
She's in there, but I'm not. I think she won pretty convincingly, but I got to double check. But as for
look it up as we go on to the show.
She looked.
Hey, look,
we
go right to the guest line. Huh?
He lost the first set. I said Goff lost the first set. So
yeah,
that
she
right
lost
there.
The first set tonight.
Yeah. It kind of looked kind of shaky, but then she came back.
Yeah, so Venus won yesterday 6-1, 6-0, and
right.
She plays, I believe that's tomorrow when she plays. So, and yeah, you're right about Coco lost first set 6-2, came back and won the second set, was up in the third set 4-1 and struggled a little bit. And that
right.
that was impressive because, you know, she hit a speed bump, and at that age, man, you could just
right.
really fall apart, but that young lady just kept herself together and, took care of her business.
And we need to acknowledge that Sloane Stephens will be playing in a few minutes, and, you know, she's another one of those young ladies that are trying to take the baton, which has been used improperly when it comes to Kaepernick and Jay-Z, but she's trying to take the baton, you know, as the, you know, latest American starlet, and, of course, she has a real famous boyfriend too, but yeah, she got her major.
Yeah,
in,
who's
but
who's
really
Sloane Stephens'
boyfriend?
Josie
Altidore.
Who?
Josie Altidore. That remember when I went to Toronto for the soccer
oh,
match?
Oh, the hockey guy.
No. Soccer.
soccer, hockey.
Soccer,
man,
yeah.
You're the expert on that, Mike. I leave that one to you.
Yeah.
But let's get right to our guest line and bring in, you know what, we're going to give him a special introduction.
All right.
Pride of Tennessee State University, Coach Sam Perrier. Coach, welcome to the show. You're on with Ricky Hampton and a fellow Big Blue alumnus, Michael Robinson of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com.
Well, I tell you what, that brought up some incredible memories. I almost
absolutely.
Started kidding. That's incredible. That was incredible. How you guys
yeah,
doing,
man?
Tonight?
Man,
fine,
we are doing
fine,
fantastic,
fine.
Brother. And it's always an honor and pleasure to have you on, Sam. Talk a little golf. Several topics we want to get in with you regarding golf. But I want to go back to last weekend at the Tour Championship. Rory McIlroy, he took home the prize there, played great, great player. And I want to get your thoughts on Tiger's season. And I saw today he had a little knee surgery, a little procedure that doesn't seem to be too major. But look, anytime somebody cutting on you, it's not fun. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the Tour Championship and Tiger season. Help us put that in perspective.
Well, the first thing I'll say is I've played that course 150 times at least. And to see what McIlroy did to it, the way he obliterated the golf course, that within itself is a story. I mean, the guy was on top of his game. East Lake literally rewards those that can hit fairways and those that can make putts. Well, not only is McIlroy one of the longest on tour, and all the stats prove it, he's also one of the best when it comes to rolling that flat stick and getting the ball in the hole. So, I mean, when it all comes together for him, it's funny, he proved it this past weekend at East Lake, but he's also done it at Quail Hollow and some other places where he's literally, once he teed it off, he was unbeatable. So
yeah.
That being said, you know, hats off to Rory. He played just a phenomenal 4 days of fantastic golf. And I also think it also shows that this entire week, this entire episode with Tiger has also proven that as we age, even though Tiger is amazing, as we age, just sometimes small nits make a huge difference in our performance. So,
yeah.
You know, Tiger would never be the one. You would never hear. I've never heard him make any excuses, never. But at the same time, it proves with the knee surgery and some other things with his back a few weeks ago, it just shows that sometimes as we age, and he's already had some a plethora of procedures done before, that sometimes when it's just not going together physically, it's very hard to assimilate getting it out on the golf course, especially in competition. So I think Tiger, personally, I think Tiger had a good season. It was a great bounce back to what he did last year, considering he won at East Lake last year and his game was on. But sometimes just the repetition of wear and tear as we get older, it takes a toll on us. So I thought it was a fantastic culmination to the season, the way Rory finished up. But it's also, I think, for Tiger, it's a great way to go out, and now he can prepare and get ready for next season.
And what are your thoughts on some of our young black golfers out there? We got Cameron Champ and Harold Varner III. Harold had a great run at the PGA, got in the last foursome, struggled a little bit on the last day. You know, Tony Finau, I say he's a cousin because back in the day he wasn't getting on nobody's golf course looking like that.
That's true.
What do you think
those
guys?
Well, I think just to start with Harold, you know, Harold and Cameron, I mean, they're doing some incredible things. And it's funny even watching Harold when he was here in Charlotte latter part of the year, and I went out on the course and walked a few holes with him. You can tell he's in such a great place mentally. I mean, his day is coming when he's going to come out, he's going to win something. He's playing great golf, even at his size. He hits the ball a long way. He has a really good team around him. I think Harold's time is coming. You know, Cameron, even though he won, you know, he won once this year, he has some good finishes. I think it was also a great tax in the season for him to realize how professionals put in that full season of play. And I think for him, I know he's won over $1.6 million. So for him, it was a good season financially. And I think now the best is yet to come because he has some of the intangibles that you can't teach as it relates to he hits the ball over 350 yards. I mean, you can't replicate that. Can't replicate that. So I think what Cameron achieved this year, I think what Harold achieved this year is pretty incredible, and I think the best is yet to come for both of those young guys.
Yeah, and I think Tony Finau
will
win a major one day.
Finau, some of what he's doing right now is phenomenal. I mean, his finishes, I mean, let's think about this. Let's just put this in perspective. This guy had a great finish at Augusta after literally dislocating his ankle before the tournament even started a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, let's think about this. Now, we have folks that have hurt an elbow that won't even go, your buddies won't even play 18 holes with you. This guy dislocated an ankle before the start of the tournament and still had a top five, top 10 finish. That coupled with his left, he has a very high golf IQ. That to me proves right. I mean, he's going to be phenomenal. He's already a really, really good player, one of the best in the world. But his upside is just off the charts.
I totally agree with that. Mike, you got anything for Sam?
Yeah, Sam, going back to Tiger. So when he comes back after all this bad publicity, injuries and all that, and just that major win, do you think that was somewhat fool's gold, or do we expect him to win another major anytime soon within the calendar year?
Well, I look at it this way, Mike. I always told my athletes, and I still do, I tell my athletes now, these young fellas that I'm putting in college, all great athletes, all great people have short memories. If we honestly think Tiger's worried about what somebody said about him or what somebody felt or did about him for something that happened in the past, that's a mistake to think that way. All great athletes have short memories. And I promise you, Tiger's one of the best. So now he's not worried about what somebody's thinking or saying, and he's also not relishing on past results. I think right now he has a different level of appreciation and acceptance for the game right now. And that being said, I think will make the game a lot funner, and I think will also put him in a spot to win again, because I really believe he will win again. And
And as far as majors are concerned, I always say Tiger and Phil will always have a chance at Augusta until they lose their length. They're still, both of those guys are long enough, and they know that course so well. He's going to always have a chance at the British Open if the weather is not too bad. Because you could tell this year it was cold air, and he just could not get loose.
Absolutely.
On that course.
Absolutely.
So he has a chance there. Hey, but to our radio listeners out there, you're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton. We're joined by Coach Sam Perrier. And Sam, And by the way, to our listeners out there, Sam is a history maker. He's the first black coach to ever work in the Big Ten at Michigan State University. He led the Spartans to a Big Ten title. And, Sam, I want to talk a little college golf now because there was a lot of news going on last week. Steph Curry, the great Golden State Warrior guard, has made a gift to Howard University to restart the golf program there. How important is that? And in my mind, when they get ready to start that thing up, I hope they give you a call. But before we get to that, what do you think about Steph's gift? And why is it important for Howard University to have golf?
Well, I think, number one, I think Steph has an appreciation of the game, number one. I think he has an appreciation of the game for where it has involved he and his family. And he knows where golf will allow young folks to socialize and network with people that you may not ordinarily get that opportunity to do. So when I heard that decision coming down the pipe, it excited me because I said, now there's an HBCU with the support and also with the manufacturing support that can now put some things in place if things go according to plan, and now they can actually compete. I mean, not only go after, I mean, if I could give you names right now, guys like Sebastian Crampton at Cal, a couple of young African-American guys on the Michigan State teams, and some other young people around the United States playing at major universities. Well, now all of a sudden, imagine Howard University calls you, and they say, hey, you get a chance in a rotation to practice at Avondale or at Congressional or at some of the, drive up the Cage Valley or some of the great golf courses in the area. You know, imagine if they said, hey, we also have facilities where you're going to have a chance to practice and get some of your top technology. Now, imagine if they also say, hey, at the same time, we're going to have a chance a couple times a year, three times a year, we're going to fly and play in some of the great collegiate tournaments. Now, that young fellow that went to the schools that I mentioned a minute ago, now they're going to say, wait a minute, maybe I get an opportunity to go to Howard, a great HBCU, get an incredible education in the nation's capital, play some of the best golf courses in the United States, get some top-notch coaching, and yet my dreams of playing professional golf still are intact.
Right.
This right here marks the spot. This right here is the X. The X marks the spot on where I honestly think golf can go when dealing with the HBCU market. It's phenomenal. When I heard that, it's phenomenal.
And Mike and I, we've talked about this before. I love your attitude about recruiting top-notch players. And I wish HBCUs would have that attitude in all other sports. I mean, use your connection to at least call a blue-chip guy. His parents might be alumnus or something. I think too many times HBCUs have had a defeatist attitude about going after top-notch players. And you know what? Maybe they just can't afford to make a trip from Nashville to Detroit to see a guy who's interested in Michigan and Michigan State. I know that's tough, but I like where you're coming from in terms of the attitude. What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, I agree, too, because, that was a very noble thing for him to do. And you wonder what made him pick Howard. You know, you think about it. His father went to Virginia Tech. He went to Davidson. His brother was at Duke. So how does he connect to Howard University? Not that you are questioning his motives, but I'm just wondering why he did that. But the fact that he did it is something that should be championed amongst other athletes too. And when you see someone like Dr. Dre give money to USC instead of HBCU, as a lot of people thought they should have, you wonder why a lot of other people aren't thinking about that too, that we need to really preserve our HBCUs and especially their sports programs.
I think the first key to good fundraising, guys, is you have to ask. And it has to be a pointed ask. It has to be a pointed ask. So, perfect example, I mentioned this concept on Saturday playing in Chris Tucker Celebrity Tournament in Atlanta. And I said to Vince Carter, I said, hey, Vince, I said, you got some incredible things happening right now in college golf, man. I said, you know, what Steph just did at Howard, I said, there's opportunity for guys like you to support that Howard team or to support some of these other universities. He said to me, you let me know what you would need for me to help. I would love to help if I can. And then he mentioned some of his buddies. And sometimes it just takes having a conversation with people. Not an open-ended conversation, but a pointed conversation. Saying, hey, this is what we're trying to do. This is how we're going to do it. These are our projected outcomes. If you do A, B, C, D, because oftentimes it's not about you giving your money yourself. It's your influence that will gain the support financially and in other ways.
Yeah, I think that's right on about that. Hey, Sam, I know the HBCUs had some great black golf coaches. I think of Eddie Payton down at Jackson State back in the day. But when you were working at the Division I level, how often did you come across coaches that looked like you?
Unfortunately, when I was out there at the major D1 level, I was the only one. And you know, the interesting thing is, I mean, there are times I was challenged on it. I can remember at a couple really, really big tournaments, one in Puerto Rico, one on the Big Island of Hawaii. Well, a couple of the top teams in the country that players may mention, but yet my Stanford team said, hey, No. This isn't an affirmative action deal. This guy right here knows what he's doing, and his track record is proving it. So all the work I've done at Eastlake, getting about 9 of those kids to go to college on scholarships, and then going to Stanford and winning the national championship. But think about it. I coached for 12 years and had 6 championship rings, 2 Coach of the Year awards. I mean, you show me somebody
that's impressive,
that's 50% win percentage, that's pretty strong.
Hey, tell me this, would you be interested in the Howard job?
If Howard would call, I would definitely be interested. Absolutely. I mean,
hypothetically, Sam, so then what would you go about, I don't want to, give away any secrets, but how would you go about recruiting athletes to come there? What would be your campaign? What would be your sale?
Well, I'll tell you what Michigan State told me when they hired me. They said, Sam, the one thing we've heard across the United States is that you're one of the best, if not the best recruit in the country. So that being said alone, my rep was always recruiting. So
Okay. Looking
at it that way, knowing that some of the young people I'm still working with right now, and I have players that I'll put universities from different countries, from Africa, from all over the place, Dubai, you name it. Having that access to different federations, having that access to different players, understanding what it takes to get a good player. But here's the real key. Having been around All-Americans, having been around tour players, one of my players won 3 weeks ago on the Korn Ferry Tour, which was the web.com. Having coached guys like that that are still winning, that have their PGA Tour cards, shows you that I've already put things in place to position guys to help their dreams come true.
Yeah.
My goal was always as a coach. I always told kids 2 things. I said my first comment in every practice is, I love jury. So our goal is, let's go win a ring. And my second comment was always, I look at myself. When I see the man in the mirror, my second comment was always, I feel like that man in the mirror, that's a dream maker. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help all your dreams come true if you're willing to put in the work. And that's
right.
Literally how I look at it.
That's awesome.
Sign me up.
To all our listeners in the D.C. area, in the DMV, Brother Sam Perrier, you need to make a call to that Howard Athletic Department and get this brother aboard, because you will surely take over the MEAC and do more in the postseason tournaments with Sam in charge there. Hey, Sam, I do have a question, because this is men's and women's golf that's coming to Howard.
Right.
And I got a question about the LPGA Tour and the way the Korean women have dominated the tour. You know, I've talked to coaches at that level and people who follow the game at that level. And one of the things I keep hearing is that they outwork the American players. And update us on the black players that we have on the LPGA Tour. We have Cheyenne Woods,
Mariah
Stackhouse.
You have the Abe girls who put one played at Alabama, one played at Texas. I mean, you have some young. You still have Shasta Everhart. You have some young ladies out there that are incredibly talented. And I think one thing that I really enjoy, I think what the Korean women have shown, is that with a concerted effort, you will get an intentional result. There's no mistake that those women are winning. I mean, they put the time, the effort, they work at it. But then everything around them is about being the best. In order to be the best, you have to be willing to sacrifice. And they put that time, that effort into doing it. And I think, you know, at some vein over here, we have a lot of our young people have a lot of distractions. You know, we're involved. I mean, our young people are involved in a bevy of different things. And so distractions are part of the norm. But there are also some incredible, incredible American young ladies that are doing really, really well. It's just a matter of time because it takes intentionality. It takes great instruction, great training, great facilities. And then intentional part takes great work ethic and takes great habits. Habits are easily formed, but also habits can easily be broken if they're intentional. So I'm excited. I mean, that's the one thing I enjoyed about my last stop at Queens. I mean, I think about it. I was there 6 years. I won 3 women titles. Before I got there, to this day, Queens has never won a women's championship. Prior to me getting there, they've never won one. After my departure, they've never won one. So I treated the women like I treated the men, and it worked out. I actually coach to this day. I coach the best 2 women in the history of the university ever. And that came from recruiting. They didn't come in that good. One girl came in. She was averaging 82. She left. She was averaging 72.
Wow.
It was
wow.
Just intentional. A high level of intention to practice to details.
Next
and
time
worked.
You're in Detroit, brother, I need a lesson, man.
Yeah, no doubt. If you're on Oakland Hills or somewhere like that, Warwick Hills, we can make it happen.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, one other young lady I want to ask you about, Mariah Stackhouse. I like her game. She is tough as nails. There's no doubt about that. But to me, it seems like she doesn't play enough.
I think she's. Well, first of all, I know Mariah. I mean, I know Mariah. I know Mariah.
Mariah.
I know Mariah since she was a kid. She used to come over to my program when I was in Atlanta at East Lake. So she would come over sometimes.
Right, she's a Georgia girl.
Yeah, she's from Atlanta. She was a really good kid, great player, great family. And I think Mariah plays. I think she plays some, but I think just what she's done is just so much larger than golf too. And we can't forget though that she's young.
Yeah.
She'll continue to mature in the game, and with maturation comes development, and sometimes comes tournament victories. So I just think it's a matter of time. But she's a really hard worker. She's got a really, really good team around her. And it's funny, you think about how the Tyrone Willinghams and the Condoleezza Rices and all those people who had a chance to say, you know, put bugs in their ear and things like that. It's funny, I was just with Coach Willingham about a month ago, and we were talking about Mariah. And everyone believes she's gonna continue to stay out there. She's going to continue to do well. She's working really, really hard.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would just say just be patient with her. Keep encouraging her. And if she keeps you sitting, if the help will cut costs, give her a place to lay her head if she needs to. But at the same time, let's keep encouraging. All these young players are phenomenal. But again, I also remind myself is we're also talking about they're competing against the best in the world.
Go ahead, Mike.
Sam, I was going to ask this question. You've coached on a collegiate level and have all this expertise. Do you ever get just regular guys, maybe young ladies, you know, just hit 50, you know, they're not really shooting hoop anymore, not out there, you know, tennis might be too much of a exertion on their body. you get people to just come up to you and just ask just legitimate golf questions, like how do I get started, what clubs do I use, and all that? You go through that process, or
that's
that beyond
daily.
Okay.
daily. I get that all the time. I'll tell you a question. You want to hear a question that I get a lot too from people who are weekend golfers? They say, Coach, I played a lot of golf, but man, I seem to ache and hurt. And I mean, am I doing something wrong? And this is my response. I played golf for 43 years. Mm-hmm. If they knew how I ache, I'm like one of those old Chevy Novas. I have to get my body going in the morning to get going.
Absolutely.
So aches and pains are part of it. I mean, if you don't have pain, you're not preparing for success. So just because somebody has a slight elbow injury or your back is aching a little bit, stretch it out and keep playing. I mean, golf to me is the greatest game in the world. It is the only game that I know of, and if somebody can correct me, I'm willing to listen. But it's the only game in the world I know where you can play with the common man and you can play with the king.
Yeah.
Once we tee it up, we're all the same.
Yeah, and it can be just as humbling as it can be. I was playing the other day. I made the turn, even par, 36. I shot 47 on the back. And Sam, I really did not hit the ball. I didn't hit it nearly as good as I did on the front. But I kept putting myself in some bad spots, man.
Right.
And it just got away from me. I'm like, what happened? Who are you? But that's the challenge of the sport, man. Those who are strong mentally, that mental toughness, and I know that's one of the things you always talk, Coach, will carry you when doubt tries to seek into your mind.
Oh, absolutely, because think about it. When you go out and tee it up every day, number one, you're not going to have the same mindset. Your body isn't going to react the same. The weather conditions are not going to be the same. And for most of us, the golf course isn't going to be the same.
Right.
So you have to approach it from a strong mindset. I mean, that has to get you in and get you out. The negative, I mean, again, short memories. It gets you in and gets you out of those situations. Because once you allow self-doubt to be you, you're in trouble on the golf course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you maybe get some checks in the mail for that little golf tip right there, man. That's what it's all about.
I can tell them where to send it.
But Sam, man, I tell you, you are the leading figure in black golf coaches in this country, man. And, man, I hope Howard gives you a call. I think that would be a great situation for everybody involved up there, because your track record speaks for itself. And, hey, I wish you nothing but continued success, my brother.
Well, I appreciate that. My goal is right now is to try to help dreams come true and placing a lot of young people in college. And, my recent last 2 weeks have been pretty good at some of the schools where my clients are going. So, Yale on down. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting being able to help a young person know that the next step of their life is going to be the best step of their life. And at that point, you know, you can make it happen. So, yeah, it's been exciting. And golf is something I've done my whole life and something I've been blessed and been afforded a great opportunity to do. And I hope I can do it for the next 48 years, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, with that being said, what would be your dream scenario? Like, is there a dream place you would like to coach, or is there a dream person you would like to coach, or is there a dream person you would like to play with?
Well, I tell you this. If I do this backwards, and I know Ricky feels the same way, but if I had a dream, I would say my dream golf partner would be restoring my dad's eyesight, going back out to play one more round of golf with my dad, who's blind right now. That would be my dream. If I could have everything my way, that would be my one dream as it relates to who I would really, really want to play with. But number two, as it relates to coaching, where would I want to coach for a dream to come true? You know what? I've always said every stop I make will be the best stop. because my dream is not a selfish dream. My dream is a selfless dream. So at every stop, I've been able to help young people try to achieve their personal goals. That's my dream. If I can help you get to where you have to go, then I know I've done my job. Like the book says, job well done. I'm really excited at that point. So
hey,
I want my next stop to be my best stop.
All right.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Absolutely, bro. But, man, I tell you, it is the greatest game in the world, and it means so much to me. I was going to tell you, my father was a golf pro 43 years at Taylor's Golf Course.
I knew you, but you know I knew your daddy. Well, you know I knew
your daddy. Yeah, absolutely. But the thing about him, Sam, I never knew when he was working or not working because he was always playing golf. I'm like, are you on the clock now, man, or are you just playing? He winked at me. Don't worry about it, son. I got this.
Yeah, man.
It is a great life. So, but Sam, hey, let's stay in touch, brother. And to our DMV people, call Howard University. Get this man over there.
Cool.
Make that call.
Well, I definitely appreciate. I appreciate you guys, and I think it's incredible what you're doing, trying to advance the game. And there are a lot of young people that need us. They need all of us. They need you for what you guys do. They need me for what I do. And I think we're that village. And I think continuing to build that village is going to be something that's pretty special. And right now I feel like I have my hard hat on and my sleeves rolled up, and I have a hammer and a handkerchief in my back pocket because it's time to go to work.
Sounds good, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we'll
appreciate that.
Text,
thank you.
You know, when
Thank
something
you guys.
Happens in the world of golf, you are one of the guys we need to talk to get some insight on.
No doubt. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Sam. Right. Talk
Take
to you
care.
Later, brother.
Bye.
That was Coach Sam Perrier.
Go Big Blue.
Love having him on, man. One of the great minds in the game of golf and a brother. And it's so funny, Mike. All those years he spent coaching, he never saw anybody else that looked like him.
Right.
That is just crazy.
Just think about
So with Sam gone, that means there's probably outside the HBCU schools that, and all of them don't have black coaches. And gosh,
right.
I meant to ask him about the, so many HBCUs have white players. And, you know, you go, including, I'm sad to say, TSU, white players.
Right.
Now, it's
right.
nothing against the white players, but, you know, we got to take those spots up with our kids.
Well, not only that, baseball. Baseball at a lot of the HBCUs are not black players for the most part. They have a lot of Latinos. Maybe some white players, and you know, for them, some of them might say, "Hey, look, man, this is still a chance for me to play Division I sports." So I might not be getting recruited by LSU and University of Tennessee
right.
and Vanderbilt. I could go over to this HBCU and get a scholarship. And you know, unlike what would happen for them coming to an all-white school, I won't be mistreated. You know, for the most part, they could come to our schools and be treated fairly.
Whereas absolutely.
You know what happened to us when we went to those schools back in the day.
Absolutely. And you know, you're seeing that. You know what?
Right.
We got Coach Perrier back. Coach, thank you so much for calling back. One question
yes,
I forgot to ask you that I really wanted to get to, Mike and I were just talking about. You look at so many of the HBCU programs. We were talking about the fact when you coached, you were the only black man wherever you went. And
right.
outside the HBCU programs, you don't see any black coaches. And even some of the HBCU programs have white coaches. I have no problem
right.
with that. But I'm disappointed that so many HBCU schools have gotten white players. And, again, nothing against the player itself. To me, that's telling me we aren't producing enough quality golfers to take those scholarships. What is your take on that? You know this subject better than we do.
Well, what I really think is, I think number one, I'll tell you what a few schools told me. I can't believe you asked that question, but I just literally talked to a school 2 weeks ago, and I'll tell you what they told me. They said, some of the HBCUs said, when they go after non-African Americans, the students receive some sort of minority scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So when they give them when they give those players a minority scholarship, it saves in their mind a golf scholarship. So
wow.
It turns, in some perspective, it turns into lazy recruiting.
Because
if you think you're going to get 2 or 3, 4 kids on a minority scholarship, you don't take the time because of minimal budgets to go recruit, and you're going to have to put some work in to find that minority, that black kid. And that's how
they are out there.
I asked the same question. I asked the exact same question.
And the black kids, young men, young women are out there, correct?
There are some young black men and women out there. But I tell you what, you have to be willing as a black coach, or as an HBCU coach, I should say, you have to be, the one thing you're going to have a high level of is acceptance. So you're going to have to be willing, and here's the caveat. You're going to have to be able and be willing to develop these guys, because they may not come in, and they all will not come in as finished products.
Right.
You see what I'm getting at? They're not going to all
right.
come in as finished products. So you have to be
just
willing.
Just like
the
young lady that came
in
averaging 82, and you took her to 72.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to have to be willing to spend countless amount of sweat and tolerance out on that course, getting those kids 5, 6, 7 shots better. Because as you and I both know, you can improve, but it's going to have to come from a place of course management. It's going to have to come from a place of nutrition. It's going to have to come from a place of physical fitness. It's going to have to come from a place of short games improvement. Also, improvement of golf IQ. You can take 6 or 7 shots off of a person's game if you know what you're doing, if you're willing to work at it.
Yeah. So, Sam, so now I know how I went from 36 to 47. I had 2 hot dogs at the tournament, man.
Yeah, I mean, with hot dogs, you do it. There's a reason I don't eat hot dogs.
That's what it was, man. I wasn't the same after
the
that. But Sam, I appreciate you calling back, man. Because, you know, and again, nothing against the kid. It's the situation. These guys got to work a little harder to find the good black players and the players that going to need development.
Absolutely.
Now, if I got a good white player, hey, I'm going to get that person too.
Oh, absolutely, because I don't think, I personally don't think there's anything wrong with a good white player or a good non-African American on a team.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I think you should make an effort to go get some African American
right.
kids.
Right.
That's
well,
why
you know
the system.
Well, Sam, my question is this. What is the attitude of some of these quote-unquote white players when they come to these HBCUs? Do they feel out of place? Do they feel comfortable? Do they feel threatened? You know, as I was saying to Ricky, you know, of course, the opposite scenario back when black players were finally getting into the predominantly PWIs, as they call it, you know, of course, they got heckled, they got hazed, they got all kind of horrible treatment, which I said, you know, it doesn't usually happen as the reciprocal. So what is the attitude of a lot of these players that come to these situations? Do they feel intimidated? Do they feel more superior? What's the attitude usually?
You know what's interesting? I think times have changed so that a lot of players are very comfortable now. I think a lot of non-African American kids are going to some of the HBCUs, and they're incredibly comfortable. And I credit the schools with being very accepting, and I also credit the coaches. I mean, there are some really good guys coaching these HBCU schools, right? Some really good guys, no question about it. And so I think the kids come in and they're very comfortable.
And you know what? As a people, we generally don't treat people like that because we know
exactly
what it is
right.
to be on the opposite side of that.
That's exactly right. That's right.
So,
we've been in that situation before, and
right.
we're accommodating, and we're very accepting of pretty much everybody.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, well, Sam, thank you. Thank you for checking back in with us, brother. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no, no, no.
And let's stay in touch.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right, Sam.
All right, you're welcome.
One of America's great golf coaches, Sam Puryear, checking in with us here on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Hey, Mike, let's move on a little bit, man. You know, we got our golf in tonight. We talked a little bit about Serena and Coco and a little tennis. But, man, we got the NFL going on, and Andrew Luck called it a day. That was stunning news across the NFL when he decided 29 years old, that's enough.
Right.
I think he's been in the league 7 years, maybe eight. But what were your thoughts on that? And are you surprised at the criticism he has received?
Well, here's the funny thing. I actually had someone that wanted me to appear on the show. He asked that I cover Andrew. I said, no, you know what? Technically, I didn't cover the football over at Stanford, but, of course, I'm always over there, and I cover basketball. And the Grumakay sisters, at least Shanae, was there during this time, and she actually sent out well wishes to him because she said, you know, hey, you were great on campus when I was on campus. So I actually met Andrew at one of the basketball games, and it was kind of funny what happened. He came out of the restroom, and I said, hey, how you doing, Andrew, or whatever. And he put his hand out. I said, wait, hold on. You wash your hands? He started laughing. He said, yeah, I wash my hands. All right. Because, you know, too many cats don't practice good hygiene in the restroom. Sorry, ladies, if you don't know that. But these cats, some of these cats, I'm like, are you serious? And then sometimes some of the older people, I'm like, man, will you wash your hands? So anyway, I get off my soapbox. So, and look how that works, soapbox. All right, so I chit-chatted with him there. I also met Jim Plunkett at one of the games. I'm Bill Walton, so a lot of luminaries hang out over at Stanford. And, of course, you know, it's one of the most pristine and prestigious universities in the world, and it's right in the midst of the Silicon Valley pretty much, and then also, you know, technology capital of the world. So a lot of stuff comes out of Stanford, as they call it, the farm. But, of course, during his tenure under Coach Shaw, you know, he was definitely up there as one of the preeminent quarterbacks to ever come out of Stanford, along with maybe John Elway. And, you know, it was a lot of hoopla around him, but he was a pretty humble guy. And as I said, my interaction with him was cool.
He seems to be just a laid-back guy.
And don't forget, he's a legacy player. His father, of course, played Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a legacy guy, and you got a few of those, just like McCaffrey. McCaffrey was a legacy guy, and he just obliterated the records out of Stanford.
And Oliver Luck was the third-string quarterback at Houston behind Warren Moon and our friend Brian Branson.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But that, you know, hey, man, more power to him if that's what he wants to do. And you know what, Mike, I think with the sophistication of these athletes today and the knowledge they have on the injuries and the CTE stuff and the money that some of them are able to make, I'm not surprised to see guys leaving earlier than they normally would.
Right. But you know what? The reaction, of course, it's going to always be blown out of proportion. It might have been, you know, a few people booing. It wasn't the majority. Same thing with that Toronto Raptors game when Kevin Durant went down. I mean, to paint the whole crowd and the whole city. You know, there are people taking shots at the state of Indiana. They say, oh, that's a flyover state, and that they're ignorant. That's why they did it. I'm like, man, cool out, man. And it's like also like – Marcellus Wiley making a comment about, well, you know, Kaepernick's from Wisconsin and, you know, was raised by a white family, so he doesn't feel. I said, do you realize that same state produced Latrell Sprewell, Nick Van Exel, Caron Butler, Terry Porter, Jim Chung, all these players that are from the hood that have been through a lot, probably more than you did going to an Ivy League school, that you shouldn't be trying to paint a brush that broad to try to say someone doesn't haven't felt the full weight. So that's, you know, and of course that was he should get the, as Charlamagne the guy says, the donkey of the week award or whatever. That's what he should get, because that was so ignorant what he said about Kaepernick. And this whole
now tell me this though, Mike. Well, if you yeah. Indy, are you giving Cap a call?
Look, let me just say this. I said that when the Packers was the best scenario. Aaron Rodgers goes out, even though you had another nuke as his backup, he just wasn't ready. That would have been a perfect scenario to get Kaepernick, who's born in Milwaukee, was a Packer fan as a kid, even when they moved to California. Then he eventually became a Niner fan. However, this guy destroyed the Packers when he was playing with Harbaugh. And people keep thinking that he just fell off a cliff. I said, no, he got hurt. Harbaugh left. He got hurt. And then Tom Sula took over, who had no clue what he's doing coaching, and then tried to bench him. Then he had to go out for the season. Then he comes back, and then there's another coach. And then the whole preseason deal. And then, so I'm like, how do you guys sit there and think that this guy could have been in two NFC Championship games back-to-back and go to the Super Bowl one of those years and very close to next year and then all of a sudden be that horrible right after that?
And Mike, even the last time he played, coming off the injury, I think he was 15. He threw 15 touchdown passes, only two interceptions, and his quarterback rating was around 90-something.
No, 16-4. He was 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
16-4, right, right. Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah, no, it's a 4-1 ratio.
Yeah, that is excellent, man. So we'll see what's happening. He hadn't played in a couple of years.
Right. No, I definitely think they should do it, but you know, it's gonna be it's you know, 30 excuses to make. So, well, 32
right.
excuses to make. So, you know, until somebody, and then of course, once again, all these, you know, pseudo JV fans think that, oh no, he's gonna do it right. We're past kneeling. I'm like, okay, and why do you think he's gonna do it right? Because he's from the Marcy Project, okay, and
right.
so he knows. I'm like, dude, he's not going to get any kind of major ownership of any team. So he's not going to be able to make any kind of moves roster-wise, okay? Now, if he gets a control of halftime, then the first thing he needs to do is get Janet Jackson back activated. Because if she's also on the same thing that Kaepernick's on, they banned her from the Super Bowl. Whereas Justin Timberlake got to come back like nothing happened. He's the one that actually pulled the piece off of her top. But
and you know what, man?
Was
remember, we had Larry Lee on a few years ago. He was talking about buying an NFL team, and he was talking about the kind of money you had. We know Jay-Z
right.
got money, but he ain't got
right.
NFL money.
That's what I'm saying.
He ain't got here in Detroit, we have the Ford family, the people
right.
who invented the automobile. That's old money, man.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these NFL teams come from old money. Man,
right.
they're gonna let their brother. He gonna have part ownership of.
He's gonna
own the team. That would never happen.
I guess, right, and people forget that he had a small bit of ownership of Brooklyn, and there's people that complained about that because they said, "Hey, man. You're supposed to be coming here with the Brooklyn Nets, you know, your hometown team. And, you know, we got people that got displaced that you said y'all going to take care of. And you never
right.
did because, once again, you don't have real power. And basically they use your black face to appease us. And who says it's not the same thing in the NFL? So it already happened in the NBA. So, and that's what I said. I tell people, I said, look, you guys got to look at, not everybody's down with this. You know, you think, like, well, because he, you know, he saw all these records and when he's got a couple lyrics on there where he's talking about uplifting the people, but those are just lyrics.
Right. Hey, speaking of
that,
speaking of the NBA, you know, it won't be long before those guys will be in training camp.
Right.
And the Lakers made a move the other day after Boogie Cousins got hurt again and is out for the year. They signed Howard.
Dwight Howard, yep.
Dwight Howard. Yeah, I was about to say Josh Howard. Dwight Howard. What do you think about that?
Well, the thing about it is that he's still not, you know, the official thing, because I think they still have to wait till him to be released, and I don't know if he has to clear waivers or not, or if they're going to buy him out, what's going to happen, because remember he's...
But if they get him,
is that a good
move?
Right. No, listen, what else do you have? I mean, the bottom line is that some teams are snake-bitten, and some players are snake-bitten, and Boogie has really been snake-bitten. You know, you could sit here and say, man, dude, what were you doing just playing with these regular Joes when you need to be rehabbing anyway? But some people feel like they have to, you know, stay in shape somehow. I don't know. It's one of those, because it happened, you can always point the fingers. If it didn't get hurt, you'd be like, hey, man, you know, he's finding a way to stay in shape. But once again, he has to rehabilitate his whole reputation from that time in Sacramento. And then, of course, it looked like, all right, he goes to New Orleans, and he and Anthony Davis, they look like an awesome duo. Excuse me. Then he gets hurt, and then you ask yourself, all right, what's going to happen now? And then all of a sudden, whoa, he's going to be able to get on the gravy train of the Golden State Warriors. Then that didn't happen. Then he gets hurt again. And then now, hey, he's going to the great Lakers, and he might get his chance now. And then he gets hurt again. So a lot of bad luck his way. But I think Dwight Howard would be the best remedy after that.
But, you know, I look at Dwight, man. He's been in the league since he was 19, but he's only 33 years old. He's always kept himself in pretty good condition. And, you know, now he's on a championship. When has he been on a championship caliber team since he left Orlando? Maybe he'll get energized when he gets here, when he gets back to L.A. He was there 1 year. And, you know, he was in Houston a couple of years, too.
Right.
But that didn't seem
to work. They thought that was going to be that kind of team when he and Nash were there, but he and Kobe clashed pretty quickly, and Nash wasn't, you know, anywhere near his MVP years. So that was probably the last time they thought something could happen. And
but think about Mike, if he goes in there and decides, I'm going to try to block everything and grab every rebound I can because I got a chance to win something, he could be a valuable addition to the Lakers. You know, I'll get points off second shots. You ain't even got to run nothing for me. I'm going to just dominate the post defensively and rebound the ball and start that break. He could do that at 33.
And you know what, though? Even though people think that he fell off a cliff, you know, to use that metaphor again, he has been getting double-digit rebounds. He's been getting it done. I mean, I think he's been doing double-doubles. So
yeah, I was just looking at his
– close to that.
I was just looking at his stats. Let me go back here. His stats, in 2017, he played 81 games. You know what? He averaged 16 points and 13 rebounds a game in 2018.
There you go.
Bruh, if he keeps those 13 rebounds and averages 10 points and the Lakers stay healthy, that's a championship team right there.
I totally agree. That's what I'm saying. That, you know, it, you got somebody that, you know, the stuff he went through with Kobe, I just don't see that ever happening with him and LeBron. There's different personalities, and maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he needs to be in a situation where he feels happy and he can feel reinvigorated. Who knows? And like I said, you know, all the Laker fans are hoping that that's what happens, but you're going to get some that say they want it to be a disaster so they can always say, well, that wouldn't have happened with Kobe, you know. So you got some people that's going to still do that instead of saying, no, man, this is my team. I want them to win whoever's out on the court. So that's when you can tell, you know, the real fans, and then instead the ones that just, you know, like on players, and they don't care about anybody else, which is that's ridiculous. You should want your team to win.
That they are going to be interesting to watch, man.
Yeah.
Hey, bro, we have gone a little bit over. Go ahead. You want to say something else?
Okay.
We'll finish it up.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say that I actually watched that little documentary they had on Ron Artest, Meta World Peace. That was really interesting. That was really interesting. They talk about him going through the dealing with the bipolar, and then growing up in Queens, you know, where Jay-Z's from Brooklyn, but growing up in Queens and then having Nas and all those guys kind of in the periphery, Nori and all them. So it was really cool, and it was really good, and it was really interesting to see what his psyche was like, and then how he played on the court at St. John's and Chicago and all those places. Then also when it came around to him getting that championship in L.A. and actually hitting that shot that sealed the championship. So it just, he kind of came full circle by from where he started and then ended all with that. And then now he's still, you know, trying to do good things. So it was a really pretty good documentary.
That, Mike?
It might be on ESPN or it could have been Netflix. I can't remember what I watched it on, but it was it seemed like it was a 30 for 30, but I'm not sure exactly. But it's about and I can't remember the exact title, but I just would tell people, encourage them to watch that, and you can get a real good perspective of Ron Artest / Meta World Peace. But I believe it could have been a 30 for 30, one of those special ones, or it was something similar to that. So just look it up.
Okay.
You know, of course, you can, with Google now, you can look up anything. So,
well, man, we got to get out of here, brother. It was a great evening. I want to thank our guest, Sam Puryear, for checking in with us.
Absolutely.
For Michael Robertson, this is Ricky Hampton. You've been listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Good night. God bless.
All right, peace.
Peace.